Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Respected listeners of Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah, we welcome you to this program. Alhamdulillah, today is with Mufti Farhan Karani. Let's welcome Mufti Sahab. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Mufti Sahab. Mufti Sahab, all well on your side?
Alhamdulillah,
all is well. Shukr, alhamdulillah. Mufti Sahab, there's just one thing we need to speak about. I'm not sure if Mufti Sahab got this message also. We did have Mufti Hassan Ali Suleiman, and he also contributed to this. John Steenhuisen has sent out a message. We know he's leader of the DA, and he posted that they are pleased to announce that in the coming days, South Africa will embark on its first ever vaccination of poultry as a proactive measure to minimize the risk of highly avian influenza outbreaks. And this also, the government of the Minister of Agriculture has also sent out a message with the government logo and the rest, the media statement. And this is vaccinating against this avian influenza. Apparently, this year is extremely dangerous, and the Ummah should be warned of it as well, that it's not just about the slaughtering. Now, they're even looking to bypass all of these things, and before you actually get to the slaughter, change this animal and change what you're going to consume. So we may just feel satisfied that it's slaughtered the correct way. But according to these messages coming in now, that this is also going to contaminate the DNA of people who are going to consume these things, these animals, over the next few weeks. That is why the great concern in this message is to see where the farmers, if you do still get those farmers, possibly you do not get on a mass scale, you're not going to get this. But to go, maybe you have to pay a bit of extra money, but to see or to give you the certain assurances to say that this animal has been brought up in a safe environment, unvaccinated, the rest. Because now we can see the DA's role in, we were wondering what danger would they serve to this minister of, as being the Minister of Agriculture. But you can see now the dangers are coming out. Mufti Sahab, perhaps you can just share with us a few advices on this.
So, this was taken, he wanted to be the Minister of Agriculture. He asked Anupoza to put him in the agriculture sector. So obviously, being paid by the Yahud and the Zionists, he had an agenda, and they got an agenda. So whoever controls the food security of the country, basically you own the country. Because whatever the people consume, then it's going to make the people react and act accordingly. So Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, kulu min tayyibati ma razaqnakum. And O people of Iman, eat from that which we have given you, which is tayyibat, which is pure and wholesome. Then on the same page in the 2nd June in Surah Baqarah, Allah Ta'ala mentioned, Ya ayyuhannasu, kulu mimma fil ardi halalan tayyibat. That, oh mankind, Ya Allah Ta'ala doesn't refer to only people of Iman. That is Ya Yon Nas, oh mankind. So Allah Ta'ala is addressing the entire mankind. Kulu mimma fil ardi. Eat from the earth, from that which is from the earth, halalan tayyiba. Halal. So Allah Ta'ala is telling every person, whether you're Muslim or non-Muslim, eat halal. Halalan tayyiba. And eat halal and eat wholesome food. So these vaccinated animals, they are not they're not tayyib. Maybe be halal because we suffer them with Bismillah Mawfar, but do they qualify to be tayyib? No, because they are vaccinated, and in the vaccination, you know, from COVID times, how detrimental these vaccinations are to the health of human beings, and now they want to vaccinate these animals. So it is going to have an adverse effect on our consumption of poultry and meat. So you're going to find now numerous new diseases coming out. Doctors won't be able to diagnose, and you'll be wondering where did it new flu come out from? Where did this new disease come out from? This formations and cancers and within the body. It's because of what he eats. So like I said, you must eat that which is wholesome and pure. So these the rule designers, they know that the body, you see the stomach, and once the Hadith of Allah is in the time of Sahaba, the one Jewish doctor, he complained, he said that why aren't the people coming to me? Like, did you tell them that they mustn't come to me because I'm a Jew? He said, no. Because we eat halal, wholesome food. And we eat only when we're hungry. We eat only when we're hungry. So that is the secret to stay healthy. That we only must consume food when we are hungry, and only that much which will satisfy our hunger. And so the stomach is the root of all diseases. And all diseases emanate from the stomach. So whatever you put into your stomach, and it becomes blood and becomes flesh.
Mm.
And then it affects everything, all your organs. So if you're eating halal food, and if you put diesel in diesel and organic kernel, produce the results that the manufacturer specified. And if you're going to put petrol in a diesel engine, you're going to just see the whole engine. So if you put haram food or doubtful food or contaminated food or non-tayyib food in your stomach, then you're not going to get piety coming out of that person. You're not going to get taqwa coming out from that person, because the fuel which goes into the body is not producing what it's supposed to. You're supposed to be producing piety and taqwa. And now because of this food you put in your stomach, it's going to produce the opposite. And now you feel the passion to read salah, to go to the masjid for salah, to read Quran, to make the Quran. So it affects everything. And then you're going to get people with mental illnesses, and because now you are injecting these things into the animals. Those animals are now mentally deranged, and now the people who consume those animals are also going to be mentally deranged. And you're going to find people with different kinds of sicknesses. So the message is from Allah Ta'ala is very clear, that you must eat halal and tayyib, and eat that which is wholesome. So, you know, in the week I saw a truck passing me, and they on the truck it said organic material. Now I'm thinking, you know what this means? It means sewage, organic material in a center. What it means? It means sewage. But the kuffar will, give beautiful, beautified names to Najasa, and then make it appealing to the people, and they will buy it. So they say organic. You know, everything will buy organic. And organic to the kafir, excretion is also organic to them. Like you see on the truck, the organic matter, it means sewage. It's not from sewage. So the organic food you buy, and also we must be careful of what does this organic really mean? Where did they grow this? Because they can grow it in pig manure also, but it is organic. And so we have to see now what's the origin of this organic food. And so and then they make those things which are halal, which are tayyib, they make it more expensive. And those things which are rubbish for our bodies and those harmful and detrimental to our health, they make it very cheap. You can buy McDonald's, you can buy KFC, very, very cheap. And if you buy organic maize meal or organic honey, organic whatever, it's very expensive. And you pay like four times the price of what you buy for something which is non-organic. And so what is good for us, you must pay a premium for it. So what is bad for us, they make it cheap. So that the people eat what is cheap, they're going to eat what is cheap, and they're going to damage their health. And then the medical facility makes money, and the insurance companies make money, and funeral parlors make money, and everybody's making money at the cost of the people's health. So we must, if we can source our own chickens, if we can source it from somebody, you know, they slaughter the chickens on the farm, and you know, the chickens are not injected with all these chemicals and or funny things. They inject the chickens with, and now the beef also. So you must be careful what we eat and what we put into our stomach.
Jazakallah khairan, Mufti Saab, for that message. Next, Mufti Saab, what other advice does Mufti Saab want to speak on, especially now Muharram coming up and the whole gifts and all of this, yeah. So there's the two extremes. Yeah, so, yeah. See, the one extreme. The one extreme is the Shias. They go into mourning mode, and the other extreme is this, where people go into gift mode. So Mufti Saab can just advise us with regards to this.
So, you know, all kinds of bishas are impermissible and they are part of it. So, they mourn the loss of the things that they are on, whom they are responsible for his death also. They are always loving the Ayahu. Take the orders, execute the same radio law. So all, when you get the other side, the Bareilis, they go into another mode, they go into, the green mode, so they go into, and so not, and what is that? Yes, there's no speciality, there's no special thing to do on the head of too special. And what we're going to do? This hadith of the Prophet on your day, more than any kind of day in the head of Mars. And you have Barakat, you have blessing for the entire year, for the year. That means to give on the 10th of Muharram, like how the Christians do at the time of Christmas and their celebrations. No, it depends on your family. You don't have to now have a big family get together and exchange gifts and buy gifts and wrap it up and put it there. In the morning you must come and get your Muharram gift. And no, that is not imitating the kuffar. So with regard to the 10th of Muharram, when the Rishon Aslam came to Medina Manawara, then he found the Jews fasting on the 10th of Muharram. So he said, why are you fasting? So he said that because our Prophet Musa alayhi salam, he was free from Fir'aun on the 10th of Muharram, saying that we are more closer to Musa alayhi salam than we are, if we follow him more than what you follow him. So, the Nabi Sassan advised the Sahaba that they must fast on the 10th of Muharram. The Nabi Sassan said also that if he was alive the following year, then he will fast on the, he will add one fast to it. So either you fast on the 9th and the 10th, or you fast on the 10th and the 11th. But our Qadirin, they used to fast on the 9th and 10th. Why? Because if you're fasting on the 10th, then if you pass away, it's not your intention now that you're only going to fast and follow the ways of the Yahud, that you can only pass on the 10th of Muharram, but just to be on the safe side that, okay, we passed the 9th, if you pass away on the 10th, okay, so we passed the 9th, we didn't want to emulate the Yahud and the Sahara. So last night in the masjid, I don't know which kitab he was reading from, but we always were told, and we see in the hadith that you must call it for the Yahud and the Sahara. You must always be against what the Yahud and the Nasara do. But they're doing something, you must do the total opposite of it. And So they fast on the 10th of Muharram only. So we must not fast only on the 10th of Muharram. They will be emulating the Yahud in their fasting on the 10th of Muharram. So either fast 9 and 10th or 10th and 11th. And what's the reward for that day? A person past years sins get forgiven. Whole years sins get forgiven. And the 10th of this month of Muharram, as we know, it means sacred. And so in the pagan times, the Quraysh and the Mushrikeen, they also used to consider this month a holy month at Muharram. So, but they used to change the month whenever it suited them. And if they didn't want to fight in this month year, or they wanted to fight and then make it another month, and then the next month, they took in our fight Muharram. Zulqa'dah, Zulhijjah, Muharram, the 3 months in a row, and then also the other month, the 4 sacred months in the Islamic year. So, the Muharram is a sacred month. What must we do specialness? Make ibadah to Allah Ta'ala, and make extra ibadah, stay away from sins, like we do in the entire year. And so, Muharram is a sacred month, but there's no special ibadah or special wazifa to read in the month of Muharram. One thing I wanted to speak about is the memorization of the Holy Quran. Now, you find nowadays so many children are doing Hizb Quran. So many children are doing Hizb Quran in these classes. But how many of them really want to do it? And how many of them deserve to do it? And whatever I say, they deserve. I'm like, who are you to say now who deserves to become Hafiz or not? So, you must remember that this cycle of Hafiz is a very big, huge cycle. It's not a small cycle. Hafiz of Quran. One who is bearing the responsibility of the Kalam of Allah Ta'ala. Bearing the responsibility of protecting the Salam of Allah Ta'ala. Now, if you take an ambassador of a country, and for example, the ambassador to the USA, and now you are not going to do something which is against the country that you are in. And now, a person is holding on to the Quran, who is memorizing the Quran, who is becoming the heart of the Quran, he is not a normal child. He cannot behave as a normal child. A child who is not doing Hizb Quran. Because he is becoming a flag bearer of Islam. Tomorrow, if the Quran Sharif are burned, like it happened in India, when the British colonized India, then they took all the Qurans and they started burning them. So, one Molana, we call the British governor of that area, and he called him and said, come here, we invited for him, you just come join us. So he called him to a jalsa, and at the jalsa there was young children completing their hijab. So he said to him, listen, you can burn all the Qurans you want. Carry on burning all the Qurans. But you cannot take out the Quran from the heart of these children. These children have memorized the Quran. And they are going to teach the Quran to those who don't know the Quran. So the Quran is kept in the heart of the mu'min. So this responsibility of Quran is not a thing of fashion. Nowadays it's become a fashion to become Hafiz. Right? Because every mother wants their child to become a Hafiz. And why? Because her nephew is doing his, or her niece is doing his, or her cousin is doing his, or somebody in the family is doing his, or her brother-in-law, sister-in-law's child is doing his. So now, no, my son is also doing his, my daughter is also doing his. But if you look at all aspects, is the child's memory good enough to do his? Every child is not made to live. First of all, your memory has to be good. Right? Then second of all, yes, we have love for the Quran. Many of the students, the children who are doing hijab these days, they don't have love for the Quran. They have absolutely no love for the Quran. And they will read the Quran. You know, it saddens you when you hear the recitation of the Quran by some of these hijab students. There is no tajweed. Nothing whatsoever. They don't know what is the ikhfa. They don't know what the mud. They don't know what izhar. Nothing. No laws of tajweed they know. And when you tell them that they must read the tajweed and say, make a ikhfa, they don't even know what you're talking about. Like, how do they even start doing this when they don't even know the laws of tajweed? So, first of all, like I always emphasize that you have to do his first finish Nazara of the entire Quran. That is very important. Finish Nazara. What is Nazara? You must be able to read the Quran, the entire Quran, from the Alif of Alhamdulillah to the Seal of Nas. You must read the entire Quran in front of an Ustad so that he may correct you and you may perfect the recitation of the Holy Quran. If you can't recite the Quran correctly, and you can't memorize the Quran correctly, because you find the child who didn't do Nazar of the entire Quran, now he started him. Now what he's doing, he's learning his sabak. So he learned his sabak, and he learned wrong. And even though the Ustad will sit with him and do the Nazar of the sabak tomorrow, before he learns it, like he marks the mistakes, everything. Now when the child goes back to learn, he learns it according to how he reads it. He doesn't even pay attention to the markings in the Quran that the Ustad made. It's here, that is not that is a lam. This year it's not, you don't read it as a seal, you must read it as a sword, is a taqim, and you must pronounce it like this year. And now he reads it, and he learns it according to how he reads it. And now the Ustad must now make Malik Mari there the next day. You see, I marked this year, you didn't learn, you didn't correct his mistake. And the Ustad is saying, tomorrow I know you're going to make a mistake here, and tomorrow my child can make a mistake the same place. So there has to be parent supervision also. When the child, the parents have to drive the child to learn their work, and learn their sabak, learn their work, make sure they know their sabak. You know, when we were doing this, then we were so scared of the Ustad. You know, forget our parents telling us and threatening us that, you know, you better know your work. And the Ustad must just have one complaint, and no more bicycle for you, and no more that for you, and it's always on bicycle threatening to get. Nowadays, you took your phone away, that we didn't even have those things. So, we had a pressure from our parents, and we were scared of our Ustad. Now, because our Ustad was very, very strict, and Alhamdulillah, we say he was strict, not that he hate us and it, but if we made a single stuck in our summer, finish, class, no summer for tomorrow. Not sabak tomorrow, but no sabak today for you. If you made a single stuck in a sabak, it kept you up there, even if it's in the middle of the ayah, you get stuck up there. And get your sabak for today. And now you must still read your sabak quarter, in your sabak para, in your door. And then tomorrow you will see the same sabak again. And if you made a certain amount of mistakes in your door, then tomorrow there's no sabak for you. So can you imagine how stressed a student is that you must know the sabak. We used to take our Quran, small pocket Quran to school also. We used to learn our sabak and our door in class in school because we are so worried. No, we must know our sabak and we must know our door, and no, we have to have sabak tomorrow. So this we had a pickup. Nowadays, the child, you know, it's not our child is just going to be, let me definitely read it, 6-7 lines, but 12 mistakes. And then you get sabak, no problem. Then the Ustad must sit with the headache of now correcting that sabak door and correcting that sabak para, and then you must stop sabak, and then the door is such a, and then the parents of, you know, but my son, you know, he made a few mistakes on the musalla, and the first question would be, where did he study? Which madrasa did he study? Where did he study? Now the parent comes back to the Molana, for Molana, he now needs to be trained, because the child was perfect, and the Molana didn't teach him properly. But when the Molana is racking his brain the entire week, and learn your sabak properly, look at your mistake, mark mistakes, make sure you don't make the same mistake. So we have to have love for the Quran. If we have love for the Quran, then we will make sure that we read the Quran correctly, we read it according to how the people who read the Quran with full tajweed and devotion. Nobody must tell you to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to learn your sabah. You know you must wake up 4 o'clock in the morning to learn your sabah. And before you go to sleep also, you must make sure that you know your work. And so, determination and also worry and concern from the child himself and from the parents. And the parents mustn't force the child, no, you must do it. In the back of their mind, is because they are under pressure, because somebody else in the family is child is doing this, now my child will also do this. How it can look, my child doesn't do this. And they put pressure on the poor child, the child can't even learn. Now, the child will sit with the child and try to make the child learn, and the parents will question the child, why the child is not learning, why doesn't he know, why he's not progressing in it. So, we have to have love for the Quran, we have to have enthusiasm to do this, and it mustn't be forced upon us. We must do this because we want to do it. We must do this with the need that tomorrow we are going to carry this Quran, and we are going to be a source of honor and pride for our parents, not only in the dunya, in the akhirah also. And that Hafiz al-Quran who became Hafiz al-Quran for men and friends, on this channel it is great. Because we never do, we never have the proper need for doing Hafiz al-Quran. We want to maybe become a qari and show off in front of people how good we can recite in it. So our need must be, perhaps, inshallah we'll speak again about this year also, about the topic of Hafiz al-Quran.
Mufti Sahib, Jazakumullah khairan. Inshallah, we'll meet you next week. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.